Hello and welcome everyone to episode 14 of the Overthrows podcast. I'm your host Param Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me as always is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And just a quick reminder guys, all of our written content, videos and podcasts can be found at goodareas.co. So go and bookmark that website. That's your one-stop shop for everything that we do. And also all super chats we have obviously planned. If you've been around for a few podcasts, we do them in the end now. And we've got Benjamin Franklin, Ben Franklin in the comments, the man on the $100 note. So he's there, got a super chat already. And Arco is saying, don't be late again. Well, we're actually quite early as per our standards. we always start this off with the IPL roundup. And Jared, I tell you, I'm quite glad we got a 150 odd game today because I was kind of done with the run fest. Like, the novelty was wearing off for me, as exciting as those games were. Like, if every game is 250 plus, I was kind of getting bored.
So I think when the chase started, they were something like, the odds were something like 1 to 100 that KKR were going to win. And I would have said, even last year, the year before, that wouldn't have been far off a 50-50 game if you got to 155, right? Like, that was considered a par score. And we, like, even within the in our group, we were chatting about it. It was like, are they a chance? And none of us really felt like they were, but that's how much things have changed. It's gone completely crazy. And so you had that. It was a fascinating game in the way that it wasn't like any of the other games in this tournament, but it wasn't a fascinating game in any other way, shape or form, sadly.
Agreed. And we have had a lot of like heavy scoring games. It has been a heavy scoring tournament. And this last week has been an interesting fielding week as well. You've got your teams like Chennai who are catching everything. Daryl Mitchell caught like 5. And you've got your teams like Punjab and Delhi who have literally dropped everything. So, you know, we go through this every week. Some weeks it's, terrible, the fielding standards. Last week was really good. And this week you got a bit of everything.
I think we might have made this comment last week, but if you can take 70% of your catches in this tournament, it does look like you're a very good chance of winning this tournament at the moment, right? Like, how much of that is just randomness and everything else? But some of the fielding has been incredible. I don't know who it was who dropped the one at short fine leg today for KKR, but you just look in there going, How has he managed not to take that?
Harshit Rana. I think it was Harshit Rana dropped it.
It was Harshit Rana. Yeah, I was going to say him and then I couldn't remember if it was him or not. But yeah, I think you're right. It was bad. It's been bad. But as you said, I thought Daryl Mitchell should have been player of the game and maybe player of the tournament for all his catches.
Absolutely. That was a ridiculous effort. Anyway, let's start off with our teams. First up, we've got the Sunrisers who lost both their games this week. They are now 5 wins out of 9 and you predicted that their batters will run out of form, so they did. The only noteworthy performance from that entire unit is probably Jaydev Unadkat's 3 for 30 versus RCB. Unadkat. Why did I butcher his name? But apart from that bowling performance and maybe some contributions from Shehbaz with both bat and ball, they were terrible, atrocious. And they even have they've put their playoff spot in jeopardy over here.
They might not have just because everyone else is ordinary, but I know what you mean. It's funny because on the power list, those are the fans who have been the angriest of where I've had them. And this is kind of why I didn't push them higher. I don't trust teams that aren't good on both sides of the ball to begin with, as you know, right? But the other thing is, you can't expect all your players to be in form with on the bat for a whole season. It's really improbable that is going to happen. I'm going to throw this to you as well. I'd be really interested to see what you think of this. I think Sunrisers batting might be the Baz ball of T20 cricket.
I agree.
All right, which will annoy people more. That'll annoy people really more. But what I mean is Baz ball worked because of a unique set of circumstances and the fact that the bowling teams were not ready for teams to come at them that hard, right? Sunrisers have done the exact same thing. Coming into this tournament, none of us had the Sunrisers as a team that was going to score close to 300, quite a few times, right? We just didn't have that on our list of things that could happen, right? And so bowling to that, especially the guys at the top, right? What do you do in that situation? Heinrich Klaassen, teams still don't know how to handle him. And so you put all that together and you have this sort of full frontal assault on you. I think teams now understand a little bit more about what is going to happen, and normal form will play a part. And so are they, do they?
They also suck at, how many they games, suck at chasing, by the way.
Yeah. How many games do you think they could win from here to the end of the year with their bowlers only?
Well,
so let's say they start making 200 rather than 250. How many games would you back them to win?
Not a lot.
It's probably none,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because I don't trust that bowling attack as much. But it's funny how you've compared Sunrise's cricket, or their version of Baz ball, to the actual Baz ball. And Pat Cummins is the captain over here. So I find that really hilarious. But I agree. I mean, I'm just keen to see how frequently can they continue to out-bat teams, because they seem to be a batting first team, quite similar to South Africa in the World Cup, the ODI World Cup. And that's where my issues lie with them. But I mean, they could still very well make it to the playoffs. I don't see them winning the title, unfortunately, just because of that reason. But hey, we could be wrong. Moving forward, let's talk about another team whose fans would be pissed. Mumbai. Mumbai Indians are now 3-9. So they've lost 6. And this week...
Importantly, Mumbai's fans won't be pissed with me, and that's all I really care about.
Yeah, but they did lose to Delhi this week, right? It was an interesting week for Delhi. We'll come to them. Tilak Verma, 63 of 32, was pretty much the only positive. He took down Kuldeep, so that was really impressive. Other than that, you could say Hardik came back into some sort of batting form, scored that 46, and Tim David was all right. But, you know, apart from those isolated performances, which weren't that great in the first place, barring Tilak's, right? Because that was an important one. It's pretty much all gone to hell for them. They've been going downhill for a while, and now the bowling isn't even working. Now Bumrah isn't even getting you those sorts of figures. And I mean, I'm afraid to say, it seems like it's the end for Mumbai.
I think they certainly have to be looking towards next year. If you look at the bottom of the table, I don't think there's a team that can't upset pretty much everyone except for Rajasthan above them, right? And they might even upset Rajasthan. But if you look at it logically, right? So Mumbai are still capable of everything. How much different is Mumbai than the Sunrisers?
Well, in terms of batting power, if you look at the team sheet, they might even be better. But when it comes to actual performances, they're not doing any of that.
And that might be a form basis. So I suppose that if you put Bumrah into Sunrisers, and I would feel very, very different about their team. I think that they're probably worth, you know, they're probably, let's say, 5%, 7% better Sunrisers are batting than Mumbai are. Certainly based on the form we've seen this year, maybe not overall, as you just said, but, you know, you can see that there's some issues with the form of some of the Mumbai players, but they're incredible. But then on the other side of the ball, they're one bowler, right? And that is the same issue that we are talking about over and over again. But I think I'd be more frustrated, and you know, you could throw RCB in this as well, right? You look at RCB in Mumbai. If I was those fan bases, I'd be like, well, we can actually beat really good teams by just playing cricket the way that we should. And yet we're nowhere near these finals. Now, with Mumbai's case, how many losses do Mumbai have? I don't have the
6
point.
And 9, which is bad.
Right? So if you have 6 losses, that means you can't lose another game, right? But that's a normal season. This may not be a normal season. And the reason I say that is Kolkata is 6-3. If they go, if they end up being, let's say they go 9-5, right? Rajasthan don't lose too many more games. If CSK are already 5-4 and now have injuries and people leaving, right? Sunrisers look like a 5-4 team. LSG, again, another 50-50 kind of team. There suddenly is an opening, right? But the problem is that Mumbai is going to have to find, everyone's going to have to find Sunrisers level form in order to be able to get them to that level to be able to get anywhere from here. But you watch I can't remember, was it a Delhi game that they played on Saturday, was it?
Yes.
Is that
I think
right?
So.
The betting line on that game was incredible because Delhi started as massive outsiders, right? And I'm sitting there going, what are we talking about here? Both of these teams are really similar, right? And if anything, I kind of think Delhi has better bowling, right? They've got two guys I trust, not quite to the level of Bumrah, but Kuldeep and Akshar, at least I've got some vibes for them. I can go with this. And so you look at Mumbai and it's like, there's something on paper that still looks really good, right? But there's something on the field that doesn't. And unfortunately, you play a short series like this, right? And, you know, what is it, 14 games? If this is a 20-game season, Bayram, who knows? you know, 25-game season, a 30-game season. You know, you and I both follow other sports that are a lot longer, and we see teams start really, really poorly, and then they come back to the end. There is a possibility of that, but it would have to almost all be from one man with the ball and nine other hitters
basically
with the bat, right? Yeah. You know, and so it's just unrealistic. And but they can't really plan for next year because they are still a statistical chance of making the finals, yeah. Right? So they have to keep pushing.
I mean, everyone is, if we really talk about that, but we'll get to all of that fun stuff. I personally am writing them off. You can take me on record over here, guys. I don't think Mumbai is making it, even though all the points that Jared has made are fantastic. I do agree with them.
The one thing I would say is that there's, because Gujarat are 4-6 and Gujarat are in seventh place. So if Mumbai win their next game, they would also be another 4-6 team. It's not as if winning the next game gets them closer. Yeah. And then it's that big, messy middle. Who knows? Kolkata, CSK, Sunrisers, LSG, one of them might go on a run. And if one of them goes on a run, then there won't be that big clutter in the middle anymore. And it means you will definitely have to win 8 games and have a good net run.
Yeah, there's that 10-point logjam, which is giving all of these other teams hope, basically. But anyway, I now want to talk about the whack-house team of the IPL, which lived up to its reputation. The Punjab Kings basically chased down the highest total in T20 cricket history versus KKR, 262 runs in a game which featured a record 42 sixes. That is correct, guys. You heard that correctly. 42 sixes. And they did that after dropping catch after catch after catch. And ultimately, Johnny Bairstow, who hasn't, you know, been informed since eons, found some and scored a ton and also carried his bat. And then the real fake Shashank Singh keeps having an amazing IPL. He scored an unbeaten 68. Prabh Simran scored like a 18-ball 50 up top. And, you know, only Punjab, I feel, can accomplish this. Like, they're that one team who could have done this. Not even the Sunrisers. That's how weird they are.
Well, I mean, it goes back to what we were saying before. If you look at this, so they're eighth on the table, so they're 3-6 as well, right? And they've played 9 games. I think that's right. Yeah, 3-6. Yeah, I can do my math. And I've got them last on the power list, right? You could make a claim that they are not all that much worse than Gujarat at the moment. Yeah. Gujarat are sinking really, really fast, right? And the only thing with Punjab is, we've seen them bat well once, and this does feel like a tournament where you have to at least be able to consistently make, you know, look at CSK, that sort of 200 to 220 type total. Yeah. And with Punjab, I don't know if we ever feel like that's going to happen again. But at the same time, they do have players that can go crazy, and everyone else is going crazy in this tournament, right? So I completely understand that. But it's the issue for them, you know, when you look at it, is their next two games are CSK. Mm. And realistically, they should lose both of them. Now, who knows what line, and we'll talk about CSK later, but who knows what lineup CSK is even going to be able to put out on the field for their next game. But that will be the one that should step them back. But as I was saying before, you look at Punjab and you go, okay, Bairstow can come off. Shashank.
Singh.
Who's the other guy in the middle?
There's Ashutosh, who's done well. And then finally,
is the other one.
Prabh Simran also clicked up top, right? I think that's very important.
Yeah, I forgot about him.
Very important for him to do well.
So you look at those four guys and you go, well, okay, it's not seven guys of Sunrisers and whatever, but maybe we can put together something. And the bowling is not great, but it's also, in this tournament, not a terrible bowling lineup. Right? Like there's issues with the bowling lineup because of the way they fit together. The issue isn't talent in their bowling lineup as much, whereas almost every other bowling lineup, the issue is purely talent. So from that point of view, you're like, okay, there's something here. But again, it's the same thing. They're 3-6 and they've got these two games against CSK. If they split those, they're already in trouble. Yeah. Right. And they need exactly the same thing, that 7-7, thing to happen for them in the fourth place. And chances are that's not going to happen.
Well, Varun will tell you that CSK have a terrible record versus Punjab. So maybe we shouldn't write them off just yet, just because they're Punjab. And I'm a big fan of the real fake Shashank Singh now. He pulls the ball into oblivion. He's great over extra cover. He has unorthodoxy. I mean, hell, if Rinku wasn't around, I would have said that he could be a lower order option for India at this point. But just to put things into context, if you take Narayan's 1-24 out, in 88 deliveries, Punjab scored 238 runs. Now, that is not allowed, almost. That's how ridiculous that is. But anyway, let's...
Ooh, is he gone?
No. I'm still here. Ooh. And you're still here as well.
You're here and I'm gone? Nope. One of us is here.
We're both here. Anyway, Let's move on to the next team then. Let's go to KKR. And after losing that record, you know, shattering game versus Punjab, they actually defeated Delhi quite comfortably tonight. Phil Salt and Sunil Narine have been on a roll as openers. They've been smashing 50s for fun. Got like twin 70s in the last game today. Narine didn't work, even though he's gotten 1 for 24 in both games. But Phil Salt got 68, you know, today as well. Quick fire. And also, you know, it's weird how both of these guys keep getting dropped. Like, sure, they've gotten runs, but everyone keeps dropping their catches. And if you look at their bowling today, I think that's the promising bit because everyone came off. The spinners were amazing. Varun Chakravarti had the best game he's had all IPL, 3 for 16 for him. Narine, 1 for 24 is a lock for Sunil Narine. That's his, those are his figures. He's patented them, right? And Harshit Rana and Vaibhav both took a brace of wickets each and went for like 7 and over. The only issue really is Mitchell Starc, who cannot catch a break over here. And even Kuldeep was taking Starc on today. So yeah, I mean, that's an issue.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence. Starc not bowling the 20th over when they were trying to bowl out the tail is like... I can't think of a bigger sign for you should not be in the side than that, because that's literally, I think when they lost about five wickets, I was like, well, they should roll them here because Starc should just come on. And I know he had Kuldeep dropped, I reckon, on the boundary at one stage. So, you know, a little bit of a bad luck there. But the fact that they didn't go back to him at the end, I just thought, oh, that is a terrible, terrible sign. Yeah, the Delhi one, I kind of felt like, I don't want to crap on the Kolkata bowlers because they won this game for them. But I did feel like it was just one of those things that just kind of happened rather than the Chakravarti and Sunil Narine stuff was different. But the seam bowlers, I felt like it just kind of happened and maybe wasn't quite as repeatable in the future. But I feel a lot better about this side if Chakravarti is bowling like a mammal again, right? Like, I mean, that's a huge step up from where he was. And I think I've seen some signs from him that is the case. But they're going to need an overseas seamer who they can rely upon. And it's quite clearly not going to be Mitchell Starc. And Chimira went, did Chimira go for runs in the game he played?
I can't remember. Big runs.
Everyone did in that game though, didn't they? That was
the 262 game.
So that's more than fair. Look, you go back and you have a look at their record. So they lost off the last ball to Rajasthan. They won pretty much right at the end against RCB. They then lost a world record chase against Punjab, and then Delhi kind of collapsed against them, and then their tail actually got them, maybe not back into the game, but certainly kept the game alive. I don't know what to do with them, right? They're second on the table. I don't think they're as good as Chennai, but they're fit and Chennai aren't, so maybe they are currently better than Chennai. I have absolutely no idea how to compartmentalize this Kolkata team at all at the moment.
I just feel like if their bowling keeps turning up like it did today, and you could be completely right that this could be random, but the local seamers have impressed me. I think Harshit Rana and Vaibhav have been good in patches. If Starc can be replaced or can turn up, that would fix a lot of things. And the spin attack, like you said, like Varun Chakravarti coming into form is the biggest boost for them. And I'll gladly sign that apology form as well, guys, for those of you who want to shit on me. But anyway...
About Chakravarti, were you out on Chakravarti?
I was saying that Suyash Sharma should replace him in the squad, so he proved me wrong, and I'll eat that humble pie.
I still like Sharma though. Like, if the pitcher starts spinning towards the end of the year, they might have to go with that sort of three spin attack. I think we might have talked about this previously. I don't mind that at all.
Plus, especially at the Eden Gardens, right? But anyway, let's move on to Delhi. They actually played thrice this week and won back to back before losing tonight versus Kolkata. The belligerence of Jake Fraser-McGurk, who literally could play baseball at this point. That's how his bat swing is, right? He slammed his second 15-ball 50 of the tournament, ended with 84 of 27 and even, you know, walloped Jasprit Bumrah, which is quite an achievement, I would say. And there was that innings plus the Rishabh Pant innings in which he made 88 of 43, but 62 of those runs came off 18 Mohit Sharma deliveries. So that was quite something. And, you know, they've had cameos here and there. Shea Hope and Tristan Stubbs have played well. But when it comes to the bowling, minus, you could say, Rasik Salam Dar's wicket-taking ability. He goes for runs, but he has been taking wickets. You've only got Akshar and Kuldeep who you can trust, and they've had a good game each. But Akshar then again also played an anchoring 50. I was surprised by Delhi. I did not expect them to win 2 out of 3 this week, but they did. Whilst I do feel that, you know, them winning 3 in a row to kind of rescue their season looks like a long shot, it's a pleasant surprise because I had them much lower in my head and they've overperformed in my eyes.
So Rob Barron said on Cricket 8 that they have lucked into a side that could potentially win the tournament.
Okay, then that's a big claim.
Yeah, so the problem is where they are. I mean, he's more saying that they have to go on a run to be able to do it. But if you look at Fraser McGurk, and Tristan Stubbs in the middle, Rishabh Pant's form coming back. They have Kuldeep and Akshar. You know, seam bowling still an issue, but that young guy that bowls the slower balls,
Salam Dar. He's from Kashmir, actually.
Salam Dar. That's the guy I was. I really like.
You know his story. You know, he was banned. For 2 years because he had an age fraud thing. So he came from the under-19 side, I think. And then he said he was 17, but he was actually 19 and they banned him for 2 years. So he's coming back from that.
Oh, wow. No, I like what he does with the ball. I think he'll go for runs, but I think he's got a really good slow ball and he's quite clever. And because he's short as hell, he gets more Yorkers in than anyone else. So you start looking at that and you're going, none of this is on purpose. They didn't plan to have this team. They didn't know what they were doing. And yet, because Fraser McGurk has on his own just transformed it so much. Yeah. And then what other IPL year would you say all you need is 2 bowlers, right? But this is maybe a season where you're like, well, I don't know, 2 bowlers, there's a few other teams. Like if you just go back to KKR. If you look at Akshar and Kuldeep, they would strengthen KKR. And Narine's had a great year, but Chakravarti hasn't been as consistent. You put those two guys in there, they would be a better side. Hyderabad, oh my God, they would kill you to have 2 bowlers of that level,
especially,
right? And even Lucknow.
Especially spinners.
You know, yeah. And Lucknow, like, they didn't even, we'll get to that later, but they forgot they had a spinner in one game. So, you know, there is something in this Delhi side, but certainly the management deserves no credit because they don't seem to have had any influence over this other than the fact that that Ricky said, oh, let's just go with this young kid. So it is all random, but it's such a destructive side. The problem is it really does need Kuldeep and Fraser McGurk to be absolute stars and then Akshar to probably be helpful with the bat and a plus with the ball. That's a lot of pressure on 3 guys. But Rishabh Pant's form has been so good of recent times that I feel more confident in them. I if you would have told me at this stage in the year, I would be talking up Delhi. I would have punched you in the throat.
Yeah, I mean, look, they need to win all 3 if they are to remain at 6 losses. So that's why I feel it's, you know, beyond them now. But mad impressed. And particularly with...
And Rajasthan's their next game, which is the tricky one. It could be really interesting because it might just be if Hyderabad slip and lose, because Hyderabad's next game is against Rajasthan as well, right? So Hyderabad could be 5-5, right? And Delhi, and if Delhi beats Rajasthan and then RCB, it could be a Lucknow play. Their last two games are against, it's not their last two games. Delhi's last game is against Lucknow. And then along the way, Sunrisers play Lucknow. Those 3 teams are all probably playing for 1 spot as it currently looks at the moment, with the other teams that we'll talk about later, all hoping that there's more madness. But this is what I was talking about before. Because of this weird triangle of them all playing each other in a short period, what you might end up with is a situation where they might all get 1 win and 1 loss, which will keep keep everyone from going up to that higher level. So it's a fascinating little thing, which means that Delhi still has a fluky chance of getting through.
Yeah, and I mean, if Jake Fraser-McGurk continues to strike the ball the way he is and continues to give Australia selectors a headache as well while he's at that, you never know, because Kuldeep and Akshar I feel confident in, right? And Pant is in form. Shea Hope slammed like 41 off 17 or something like that. And Tristan Stubbs has been pretty good this season. So yeah, jury's still out on Delhi, but I mean, maybe if they were 5-5, I would give them more of a shot. It's just that if they, they need to not lose at all, which will complicate things for them. Anyway, Let's do one more team and then let's take a break. Let's just talk about the league leaders, Rajasthan. They defeated Lucknow this week, courtesy of unbeaten knocks of 71 and 52 from informed skipper Sanju Samson and Dhruv Jurel. So Sanju has been terrific this season. This might just be his best IPL season ever. And he's even pushing his case for, you know, India or Indian selection for the T20 World Cup, which, you know, we'll talk about at some other point because they've got a lot of top order players. But Sanju has been so reliable with the bat. And now, you know, they've got Jaiswal and Butler performing, you know, here and there. We've seen Rayan Parag do well. There are other players as well who I'm forgetting right now. And that, like Hetmeyer does well, right? And now you've add Dhruv Jurel to that mix, who's also gotten a 50. So different players are raising their hands up and they're performing. And, you know, with Sanju in the form of his life and an opening pair of Jaiswal and Butler, plus arguably the best bowling attack in the IPL, you'd have to say that they are literally the best team in this competition by a country mile.
Did you just say arguably the best bowling lineup?
Are they unarguably the best? Yeah, of course they are.
Well, I mean, who's the second best bowling lineup that is even in the conversation?
Maybe Chennai, I don't know.
Yeah, Chennai's okay, I suppose. But again, we have no idea who's going to be playing for them in the next game. That Lucknow game was really interesting because they got the two early wickets. They were in front. And then Lucknow absolutely dominate that game for ages, right? And both their spinners went for runs. Most of the seamers, I think, other than Sandeep Sharma, went for runs. But they never let the game get away from them. Then they lost the three wickets. And if Hetmeyer had come in and won that game, you'd be like, okay, fair enough. But the best possible situation happened was it was Dhruv Jurel who changed that game. Samson ended up with the good numbers because he went happy whacking at the end, right? But it really was that Dhruv Jurel period where, you know, he came in and, you know, instantly just brought the game back into Anfield. Robin Powell has slogged a couple, but if Rian Parag and Dhruv Jurel and Robin Powell can keep slogging, that means you feel a lot more confident in their batting all the way through. They've got two openers who can make hundreds. They've got Sanju Samson, who can get you 60s and 70s regularly. Rian Parag, who might be able to get you 50s and 60s regularly. You add Dhruv Jurel and Robin Powell to that with Hetmeyer for the end. Suddenly it looks a lot better. But at the same time, it also looked like they could all fall apart in that game. And so it does show you how fragile they're, you know, they had to use all five bowlers. They had to get runs out of all their batters. All that sort of stuff that they have issues with in that side still showed. But I think it was probably the best grinding win I've seen this season. And that's generally what good teams do, right? They find a way to win even when they shouldn't. And that's what that one looked like.
Plus now with Neandre Berger out and Sandeep Sharma doing well in the power play, which is a big win for them, right? They can afford to play Rovman Powell, in which I definitely believe makes them stronger. But let's see if they slip up eventually. But right now, they are my favorite team, at least. Plus, I love pink colored jerseys. So there's that bias, I suppose. Anyway, we've done six teams in a record 28 minutes. We'll be taking a short break over here. You guys are watching Behram and Jared on Uncovered. And we'll discuss the remainder of the four IPL teams after this short break. So stay tuned.
If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today.
Welcome back to Overthrows. You guys are with Behram and Jared. We should discuss one of the logjam teams now, and I am inching towards Lucknow. Now, they chased down the highest ever IPL total at Chepauk, which is, even if it was against the wet ball, it's quite an achievement. I've been after JL, right? And Lucknow lost to Rajasthan, but they had an okay week, right? Because they won a great game. And I've been after JL to replace Marcus Stoinis with one of Ash Turner or Kyle Mayers. And Marcus Stoinis has basically gone on and slammed an unbeaten 124 of 63, won that game in Chepauk, was promoted to bat at number 3, and he made full use of that wet ball. You add KL Rahul's form to that. He scored another score of 70-odd. And then also Deepak Hooda has been getting quick runs. Scored a 50 and then also a nice little cameo in the other game. And, you know, the batting is sort of coming together because Quinton de Kock will also give you runs here and there. Nicholas Puran is there, who is, you know, pretty much the best batter in this lineup. The bowling is where they have looked a bit dodgy, right? They don't use their spinners. They didn't bowl them versus Shivam Dubey because they were so afraid of Dubey. And then Matt Henry was good versus Chennai, 1 for 28. And then Krunal Pandya has those frugal games. He went for none for 24 in one of those. What is exciting me is that Mayank Yadav is coming back from injury. And that could really turn things around for Lucknow. In fact, now I have them really high up my power list because that guy could win them games on his own.
If he comes back and he is that what we saw from him before, then it makes their bowling attack a lot better. Not bowling Ravi Bishnoi to the 16th over. It's like when he bowls wrong-ins to Dubey, doesn't make any sense to me anyway. This is when matchups don't make any sense. It's like, why are you doing that? So I have issues with some of the decisions that they have made and what they do. They beat CSK though twice, right? Like, so, you know, there's certainly something here. They feel like one of the more normal sides, right? They bat a little bit and they bowl a little bit. Like, I'm not sure what you would say their best strength is as a team overall, but they've got little bits that work all the way through. If Mayank Yadav comes back, that could be really, really helpful to them. But yeah, it without him, they might still slip into the fourth spot, but they probably won't do anything with him. And if he's bowling anywhere near the way he was earlier in the season, they could do something in the playoffs, right? All they need to do is come fourth and he has one or two good spells and they're a chance of making it to the final.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I have a lot of hope for them now if Mayank is as good as he was before injury. And I mean, I think they have the batting, right? KL is doing well now. He's also playing brisk cricket in the power play, which is, you know, new for him after a long time. I think it was that Punjab season all the way back when he was really, really good in the power play. So that's working out. You've got a few accomplished foreign batters as well. Puran, a lot rests on his shoulders. And, you know, you've got these bits and pieces players like Krunal Pandya. Things could work out if Mayank Yadav is as ferocious as he was before.
Yeah.
Anyway.
If he's in there, it just looks, the team's more dynamic. Yeah. At the moment, you know, Kolkata, Sunrisers, Delhi, Punjab, Mumbai, RCB, right? So everyone else other than Gujarat, there's just a lot of chaos, right? A lot of those teams have a huge ceiling and a really low floor. Yeah. Lucknow don't. Lucknow, somewhere in the middle. With Mayank Yadav, suddenly their ceiling goes up and they're not going to have a low floor. Yeah. And so you look at them and they're 5 of 4. Mm. Right? So all these other teams we're talking about, you have to do it. They can have 2 losses and still probably be okay if they have 2 losses in the last 5 games. And they play Mumbai next. If they beat Mumbai, they're 6 and 4 and they're up there with Kolkata and Chennai, right? And that makes it really, that takes them, at least in the short term, away from that battle for the fourth spot. Yeah.
And I'm feeling good about this team, especially if Bishnoi has a couple of good games and Mohsin does well with the new ball, as we have seen him do. Anyway, Gujarat lost both games this week, which included a thriller versus Delhi, which they could have really won had Rashid gotten them over the line. But fantastic game that. And then they got destroyed by RCB. Sai Sudarshan scored back-to-back 50s, 69, and then an unbeaten 84. We're going to be doing a footmarks on him later, so stay tuned for that. David Miller got a quick fire 50, and Shah Rukh Khan, who was promoted to bat up at 4, also got 50. But, you know, that's pretty much it. There's nothing else that's working for them. We kept saying in previous podcasts that this is a great post-power play bowling team. We haven't really seen that from them, right? If Sandeep Warrior's 3 for 15 in 3 overs are your best figures in the week, then something is going terribly wrong with you. Mohit Sharma, who both of us thought was a solid chance for India's World Cup squad, has gone from elite death bowler in the IPL to someone who's just going for runs left, right and centre. I mean,
It might as well be you out there, Bayram, bowling.
He went for 73 versus Delhi. He beat Basil Thumpi's record, which I thought would never be broken. But now I think even this 73 will be broken the way things are going. And that is the most expensive spell in IPL history now, none for 73. And the spinners, you know, we talk about that spin trio and how fabled they are and, you know, how it will be really hard to tackle them. Well, Sai Kishore, Rashid Khan, Noor Ahmed all had a terrible week. They were whacked left, right and centre. And I mean, things are really seriously like messed up for Gujarat now. Playoffs look a distance away.
So talking about a moment ago, like where Lucknow look elite, right? And we still don't quite see it, even though we think they're quite solid. You looked at Gujarat and we knew where they were elite. And we knew what they were best at. From that 6th over mark to the 20th over mark, we were like, good luck. you're going to have to attack Noor Ahmed and he's going to get wickets. Yeah. You can't do much with Rashid Khan, and Mohit Sharma is either going to get you out or you're going to be defensive against him.
You can't do much with Rashid Khan unless you're Will Jacks.
Yeah, exactly. And that was 12, and that's going to be 12 of the last 16 overs in some cases. Other cases, it might be like 9 or 10 of the last 16 overs. And so you either have to whack the crap out of them early on and hope you don't lose any wickets, or it was going to be tough. And now you look at it and go, Rashid Khan has bowled okay this year at times. And there have been games when he's looked fantastic and there have been games when he hasn't. Noor Ahmed's best ball still looks really good. But you look at him compared to Kuldeep and you're like, the consistency is not there. With Will Jacks, I mean, Will Jacks gone on to get that incredible 100. But let's be honest, if that was Kuldeep or Tahrir Shamsi, he would have been gone because he couldn't pick the left arm wrist spinner at all. And Noor Ahmed could not get the ball in the right spot at any stage. All he had to do was come around the wicket and pitch every ball on middle on off stump. One of them would have hit leg, or he would have missed off with the wrong end and he would have been absolutely fine. But instead, he stayed over the wicket, and I will never understand that. And as you said, Mohit Sharma, it's gone.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, you know, I talked about it before, you know, so many times with these slower ball bowlers, when the slower ball isn't getting the revolutions, they just get absolutely met. And that's where he looks at the moment. And he's now completely lost whatever confidence he'd built back up for him, himself. And it's a real, real shame. I think if I was an IPL general manager, I would be buying him next year on a discount and seeing if it just comes back. But the way the IPL works, we might never see him again. So he will have gone from one of the most important bowlers in the competition, and a year later it says like, well, he came back and he had one, you know, a little while. Now he's gone.
Yeah, it is really tragic because I had expected him to do really well, and he had a really long run, like a season and a half or something like that. So the drop off has been exaggerated, almost. Like, it's crazy how he's literally gone from that to one of the worst death bowlers in the competition.
When they beat Rajasthan, they were what, 3-3, right? At that stage, I think we both thought that they were a genuine finals hope, right? At now, even if they had won one of these games, and remember, Delhi only beat them by what, 3 runs, 2 runs, 4 runs, whatever it was. Even if they won one of these games, there's no way you would look at that side now and go, that should make the finals. Like, as I was saying before, I almost think Delhi, Punjab, Mumbai, RCB all look more dangerous than Gujarat currently do. They go one pace with the bat and they have no bowling unit cohesiveness at all. They can't take early wickets, and then in the middle, it goes to hell. So, you know, unless Sandeep Warrior actually becomes a warrior, I think they're going to struggle.
Yeah, I had them high up initially because I thought that bowling attack would do really well, but it's completely fallen off. So yeah, Gujarat are struggling, and I don't see them making the playoffs, but let's hope they can surprise us. Anyway, let's talk about RCB, who now still have, mathematically at least, a chance to make the IPL playoffs, which is fantastic.
Two in a row!
They've won two games this week, which is crazy. Back-to-back 50s for Virat Kohli. One was extremely slow, 51 of 43, which was terrible. And then one was quite good. It was an unbeaten 70 of 44. He attacked spin in that innings and then told the stats guys to fuck off in the post-match interview sort of thing, which was really interesting. A lot of people had a lot of stuff to say about that. But Kohli, or both of his knocks, weren't the major talking point for RCB this week. A, I think Rajat Patidar versus spin is amazing. He really mows them over mid-wicket, like, powerfully, and it's great to watch. And he got, like, 50 off 20. But most importantly, and it's time, Will Jacks, 31 ball 50, 41 ball 100. He went from a 50 to 100 in 10 deliveries, which has never happened in the sport before. And he completely annihilated Mohit Sharma and Rashid Khan, which is kind of crazy, right? I mean, Will Jacks wasn't even in the starting 11 at the start of this tournament. And now, even though Maxwell is back, he's being retained in that first drop spot. And I mean, we know that RCB won't make it, but this is still fantastic.
Yeah, it's really interesting that, like, the Virat have a go at stats people because there's only one stat that matters anyway, 3-7. So I thought that was interesting. But the Patidar Will Jacks thing, I think, is great for them. It gives them a couple of options when it comes to the mega auction and everything else. I know how highly Will Jacks is thought of within English cricket. Obviously, you know, my friend is the Surrey coach, and he's been telling me, wait until this guy figures it out. It's going to be incredible. We've seen a couple of hundreds this year where he just like, what is actually happening here? Because you had the situation where it didn't look like he had never seen wrist spin before for a good part of that innings. And then suddenly he's just like, I'm just going to hit every single ball from Rashid Khan for six from here on until the end. So it was bizarre. But, you know, they've given themselves some life. I still think it would be better for their future if they had moved Faf on and changed their entire lineup and, you know, tried some young bowlers and you know, did some things like that. They haven't. IPL teams very rarely look towards next season during broken seasons. I always think it's a huge waste, but I don't know. Maybe if they get to 7-7, they've got quite a light runner. I can't remember what their last game is, but they play Gujarat, Punjab and Delhi in their next three games. So they give themselves a really good opportunity to win all three of those games, right? You know, at the moment, you know, Delhi and Punjab are playing, you know, I've played okay cricket as well, but you would have to say RCB looks a lot more dangerous than Gujarat at the moment. So they, you know, if they do win all three of those, it'll be hilarious. If they can do that at the end, they might end up being the strongest team that just misses out on the finals.
Who knows?
But it's, again, it's the same thing. It's like the bowling. What do you, you know, what are we
even though they
here?
Were kind of good in one of those games. Siraj went for just 20. Yash, what is his name? Sorry, Karan Sharma bowled well, like 2 for 29. It was weird, right? It didn't make sense. But I love the fact that they're still alive, because here we are, you know, what, 5-6 weeks in, and no team has, you know, been eliminated. So I like that about this IPL. And also Varun is saying that CSK is the last match. So, tough for RCB.
Yeah, but that's great, isn't it? Like that makes it even more exciting. If, you know, that, I mean, that game a couple of weeks ago meant absolutely nothing. CSK is 5-4. And I think they're the second best team in this competition, right? But they are 5-4. Varun doesn't think they can beat Punjab. They could be 6-5, right? You know, Gujarat is another CSK game that's coming up. Who knows what their record is when they get to that last game against RCB, is my point. It would be absolutely, you know, fascinating to see where that
is.
What's the deal with Delhi playing 11 games and other teams playing 9? It's freaking me out, man. And also, it makes them higher up on the points table than they should be. Yeah. Can people start doing this in win percentages? Why are we still doing points?
Yeah, that's true, actually. And they played thrice this week. And I was like, seriously, I'm watching Delhi play again? This is weird. There are teams which have played once this week and now Delhi's playing three. But anyway, I mean, we'll only see them thrice again this season. Speaking of Chennai, which is our last team, I mean, I am backing them to go to the playoffs just because they're Chennai. And I mean, even though they lost that game to Lucknow at home, in which, you know, they scored more runs at Chepauk or conceded more runs at Chepauk than they have ever in the past, I get that. But their win versus the Sunrisers was very, very convincing. Ravi Jadeja, brilliant with 1 for 22. The rest of the bowling too, Tushar Deshpande continues to surprise us, 4 for 27. And then also, you know, the rest of the bowlers, Fizz did well, Pathirana did well. Everyone kind of came to the fore. Right? Even though they're going to lose Fizz, I feel like they can kind of back him up, right? Teekshana could come to the squad. But the main takeaways over here are A, Daryl Mitchell has 5 catches and finally an IPL 50. Ruturaj Gaikwad, who first carried his bat for 108 and then doubled down with 98. And this is a guy who plays risk-free cricket for the most part. He's a technician, front foot or back foot. It's like very few shots will be aerial, and I love that about him. But my guy, my favorite Indian player, barring Jasprit Bumrah, because I just love him too much, from this IPL is Shivam Dubey. He has been Chennai's MVP. I would be surprised if he's not starting for India. He is known as a spin basher, but literally Lucknow did not bowl any spin versus him. And he smashed, who was it? Mohsin, Yash Thakur, and one other seamer that I can't remember. He literally obliterated them. He got like 66 in one game and 39 not out in the other on not a lot of deliveries. So I feel like he's that MVP sort of player in Chennai who could really turn things around and even win them this IPL. I love him. And I'm feeling good things with respect to Chennai all over again.
What if Gaikwad was injured, Pathirana is injured, and Fizz goes
home? They're fucked.
And that's the issue with him, isn't it? It's like, if you keep this side together, I mean, I like the idea of Teekshana coming in for Fizz at home. And they are going to be playing, they might play a couple of finals at home because there's a bunch of finals scheduled for Chennai, right? So there is an advantage there that they will get and maybe Tikshana will. I expect the wicket in Chennai to spin a lot more after the Stephen Fleming comments than I did beforehand, now that he's made a big deal of it. So I do expect that to change. They've got an incredible net run rate. I think they've played a lot of very good cricket, but they have got four losses. And, you know, so Gaikwad, why was he on the field? They were... He clearly should not have been on the field with that thumb injury. And that ball that he fielded, when it was coming, it was just trickling to him. And then his thumb started twitching. I could be wrong, but like, as someone who's broken a lot of fingers and thumbs before, that usually means it's broken.
Ah.
And that if that's what happened and he was back on the field, that's really, really bad. And they were massively ahead in that game. It's like, just get him off. Yeah. Right? He doesn't need to be out there at
they
that
do
stage.
These stupid things all the time, like fielding him over there and then promoting Jadeja to four ahead of Shivan Dubey. Like, there are things that I don't understand that Chennai sometimes does, but I feel like they've got enough quality to at least make the playoffs. And I mean, one of these days we'll get to see Moeen Ali bat again, right?
I think, so my biggest issue with them at the moment is I still think they're playing 2002, 2003 T20 cricket in a tournament where 2024 is a completely different animal, right? So that is kind of my issue with them as they are currently sort of set up at the moment. You can have an overseas player get injured. If Gaikwad gets injured, Gaikwad is the reason I feel much more confident in this team, because I needed one player who could cover Conway, really, is what I was looking for.
Because Rahane cannot do that as opener.
No, exactly. And then let's say, worst case scenario, Fiss goes home, And Partharana is injured, right? And we don't know. We know he went off the field the other day. It could just be precautions. It could be anything. You then got Richard Gleeson bowling for you, right? This is not slagging off Richard Gleeson or anything, but, you know, that's a big... Partharana looks like, what, in the top five best bowlers in the tournament?
I would say, as far as impact bowlers are concerned, he's right up there, you know, second to perhaps Bumrah. And who else do we got? Chahal, Kuldeep, they get wickets for you. Trent Bolt has been really good, you know, those guys.
Yeah, I mean, he's right up there. Mike Yadav and him, it's come to the point now where I kind of think when he comes on, no matter what the match situation is, it's just going to go back towards his side, which even for Mumbai, I don't feel, right? Just because, you know, he has that such a big impact on the way that he's going at the moment. Whereas I think with Mumbai, it's just like, well, we'll block Bumrah out and then we'll have a go at the other end. Whereas I think with Chennai, it's like, oh God, now we've got to attack Deshpande, or, you know, we've got to go after Shardul, who bowled a really good spell the other day. I thought it was incredible that they used him as an impact sub as a bowler. I don't understand that
I
at
was
all,
like, but, if Shardul Thakur is getting 1 for 27, then that actually tells you how good of a game, who was the opposition again? Sunrisers have had.
So you know, you look at all that and it could fall apart, but I do think they're a really good side.
And I would definitely back them to make the playoffs. But hey, 48 and a half minutes and we're done with our IPL roundup. Everyone who is here for international cricket, we'll be covering Pakistan versus New Zealand after this short break. So yeah, you're with Behram and Jared. This is Overthrows. See you after this ad. Welcome back to Overthrows. You guys are with Behram and Jared. And New Zealand's E team, or Z team, whatever you'd like to call it, was over in Pakistan to play 5 T20 internationals. When we spoke last about the series, after the first washout, we were at 1-1 and Chapman had basically stolen the show. And New Zealand actually ended up drawing this series, which is a win for them. You know, Chapman and Sodhi won them a game, but then afterwards they defended 178 in a game where newcomer Tim Robinson scored 50. And then William O'Rourke, who remember took those 9 wickets versus depleted South Africa on Test Dash debut, he took 3 for 27 and then 1 for 25. And this guy has a bit of Mornay Morkel in him, if you actually look or watch him bowl. That action is very similar. Ben Sear is also impressed. He took 2 for 27 in that win. And then Tim Seifert got a 50 in that last game. So they got some performances out. They drew the series 2-2 with an almost full-strength Pakistan. And at this point, you've got to ask yourself, what are Pakistan really doing?
I think the bigger question is, how on earth did 3 successive T20 games all have a first innings of 178?
That is also creepy, right? And I mean, that tells you a lot about Pakistan as well, because
At least we know what the pass score is.
But that's the issue, Jared. This is a team which aims for pass scores, and that's actually showing in their numbers. Like, if you look at their middle overs run rate since the 2022 T20 World Cup, it's at 7.3, ahead of only Afghanistan and Zimbabwe. And if you look at their average sixes per game in this two-year period, which is 46 T20 IS, by the way, that's a big sample size. They're averaging a smidgen under five sixes per game. So that's not good at all. And that middle overs, you know, cruise is what costs Pakistan these games. They leave too much for the last five overs. Fakhar Zaman batted at four. And even though he got like 60 odd and 40 odd and like 100 runs across two games, they were anchoring innings at number four.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So what's the decision that's led them to Fakhar Zaman as a middle order player?
Especially when you've got Shadab Khan, who we've even done work on, and of how his true strike rate versus spin in the middle overs is like a full run higher than the rest. I remember doing this with you. And he's proven it in the PSL time and again. Just this PSL, he was really good doing that. So if you've got a guy who actually is also claiming that he values impactful innings more than consistency, why are you not using him at that correct entry point where he can come and be your destroyer of spin? I don't understand that. If Fakhar Zaman is to come at number four, why is Fakhar not smashing it from ball one? Because we know he can do that. Why is he 27 off 27 and then ends up with like, 61 off 45, something like that, right? I'm just not sold on Fakhar at four if he's going to come and anchor. Because you've got Babar up top, who was having a terrible series, by the way, then finally got a score, got 69 or 44. But then again, Jared, same Kohli-esque trend. Does really well in the power play, slows down in the middle. And that is going to be an issue for Pakistan, because I feel like if they don't, aim for above par scores, they're going to keep winning games the same way that they do and then losing everything else. Because their strike bowlers, if they're not on form, they're going to lose. They don't have a plan B or a different method of victory, which is quite concerning this close to a World Cup.
Yeah. I mean, yes, they basically, it's the same thing that we always talk about, that we were talking about the last time they played in the World Cup and everything else. I think that's why I'm interested in the Fakhar Zaman thing, because clearly he can't be an anchor.
Yeah.
So, and why would you want him to be, of all people, to be? Pakistan has no issue in finding anchors. And the Babar Azam thing and the Mohammad Rizwan, you can throw both of them in. You can't have another anchor on that side.
You had Shaan Masood like, in the previous T20 World Cup, who was the anchor after the anchors, and that didn't make sense.
You had the triple anchor. Yeah. And you know what happens with a triple anchor? It takes the boat into the water eventually, which, to be fair to them, they made the final, didn't they? But you just have to keep striking so much. It'd be really interesting to see what the impact of this IPL is going to have on teams like Pakistan, because we know the impact sub is playing a big part in why teams are scoring so much quicker. We're all okay with that. However, there is an element to all of this of what is actually, if every player in the world starts batting, like if you go up against South Africa or England or Australia, these lineups have just been whacking sixes out of their butts for weeks. And then Pakistan's like, no, I think you'll find 178 is par.
I mean, Pakistan are perennially like 120, 125 in the 15th over, at the 15 over mark, which is honestly frustrating at times, because you know that these guys have the resources. Like, you've got your Saim Ayoubs and Usman Khans, but even in this series, they didn't come off, right? And at times I felt like nerves were playing a part, like especially for Usman, him having burned all those bridges with the UAE. I felt like that came out in his batting, because he was, 16 off 17 at one point and got these starts and couldn't convert. Saim Ayoub, at least Babar and Azhar Mahmood are backing him. So that's a good thing, because he is someone who could turn things around, particularly in the Caribbean, because he was good at this game.
He's very young, though.
Extremely young. But I feel like it's the strategic blunders and the aiming for par scores bit, which is hurting Pakistan. And you remember in the last overthrows, we were discussing how Azhar Mahmood said one thing, Babar said one thing, and Shadab said one thing. Well, at least this time around, Babar has admitted that they were 15, 20 runs short every single game. So that's a step in the positive direction. That's the biggest takeaway over here, because it's been a shit show for Pakistan otherwise.
So that means that 193 was par.
That's probably what they tell themselves, right? Because as Jared, in the last 2 years, in those 46 games, they've crossed 200 once, right?
So I had this big, lots of big conversations with cricketers when I was an analyst about par. And I said, I think the worst thing that happens to cricket is is that you guys, someone in your team decides what par is and you bat towards that mark. Yeah. And that is why, that is one of the big reasons why chasing is so much easier in T20 cricket. Whereas actually what you should be doing is going, let's see how many we can get, and then stretch the opposition and get them into a position where they are going to have to put themselves out in the pressure from the start. And that's a really hard conversation to have. But of all the countries in the world that are most par obsessed, like Bangladesh and Pakistan are probably right up there, right? Of just like, and remember England used to be like that as well. That I used to cover England games. I remember getting furious at England in the World Cup. I think it was in Christchurch. They played Scotland. And they made 300, and they were like, you know, I'm like, you could have made 380 in that game, right? If I remember correctly, I think the first 25 overs, they scored more than they did in the second 25 overs on purpose, right? Mm. And they delayed Joss Butler coming. There was all sorts of weird stuff going on. I have to go back and check that game, but I remember covering it and just going, what on earth is happening? Mm. And it's this par thing of like, there. Forget par. Let's see how many we can get. That should be the thing. Yeah. How many can we get? Can you know, we're 5 above par, we're 20 above par. Well, 20 above par is fine. Not if the other team scores 21 above par. Like,
and I mean,
and you've just set an artificial limit in your head. Mm-hmm,
absolutely. And that's what happens in those arcade type games. You try to keep beating your high score. Was Pakistan like, okay, this is it. This is the ceiling. This is what we're going to try and get. And that's what's hurting them. And I mean, you know, it comes out in their T20 batting middle overs where they're just knocking it around, and this is 2024. It won't work that way. But anyway, on a closing note on this series, I will say that their bowlers have actually done well, even if it was New Zealand's depleted side. And when I say depleted, I mean that there were two or three guys who play in the first team in this one, right? Everyone else was new. But Shaheen, after doing well in the first few games, and by the way, they rotated and rested their players and their bowlers, which is great.
We were all
unheralded
shocked.
For Pakistan. But Shaheen is now, you know, on to 50 first over wickets in T20Is, which is a record. And he took 4 for 30. So that'll do well for his confidence, especially after that whole captaincy drama that he's personally experienced. Abbas Afridi, the other Afridi, took 3 for 20 in 3 overs in 1 game. Really good variations, good back of the hand, slower one, and a killer Yorker too. So it seems that he's developed. And then Mohammad Amir was pretty decent on comeback, I would say. And the spinners, you know, Abrar, we spoke of last week, Usama Mir, after going for 43 in the fourth T20, came back strong, took 2 for 21 in the last one. And Shadab and Imad kind of pitched in with a wicket or two over there. So I think that even though this was depleted New Zealand, if Pakistan's spinners are taking wickets in the middle overs and Shaheen is taking wickets up front, at least there is that positive that you can take to Ireland and England. Because clearly that's the only way they can win games, as we know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good sign because in the ODI World Cup, they didn't look like they were going to strike, right? And so at least now they look like they can strike again.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, moving on to some fun stuff in women's cricket. And of course, the West Indian women are over in Pakistan. They haven't lost a single game. They've played 3 ODIs and 220 internationals. They won 2 games by a 1-run margin. So there were a couple of heartbreaks for Pakistan. Hayley Matthews, we spoke about her last week of how she had come of age. She scored 140 not out and took like 3 for 17. And this week, she has done even better. She scored 141 in the last ODI, took 2 for 26 in 8 overs, then came back in the second T20I and scored 58, took 3 for 25. So Hayley Matthews right now is invincible. It's Pakistan versus Hayley Matthews, basically.
I mean, you know, she's a ridiculous cricketer when she gets it all right. As probably, you know, we talked about last week, it's taken her a long time. But she is carrying that side and has carried it for a little while now. And Pakistan is probably, hopefully in this next generation, they start to get Hayley Matthews type level players, right? You know, in fact, you look at Dotton, Stefani and Hayley Matthews, you know, West Indies have had 3 pretty big stars. And, you know, I know Sana played for Pakistan, but they haven't had really that level of player all that much. And that's the level that they need to get to. Them in Bangladesh, the talent isn't, you know, the overall talent isn't the issue, but you do need a couple of players. You know, look at how much better South Africa got when, you know, Marazan stepped up to that level. You know, they still, the 9th and 10th best players in South Africa can sometimes be quite ropey, but it doesn't matter because you have a star who can overcome that. And that's not the case with Pakistan, and it is the case with the West Indies.
And I mean, Muniba did do well up top in the aftermath of Bisma's retirement, which we'll speak about on Uncovered. Yeah. She scored a half century, but then this other opener, Gul Firoza, scored 14 of 29. So the game was gone, right? Apart from that, the bowlers have actually been doing well. The slow left-armer, Sadia Iqbal, she's done well. She's been frugal. She's picked up wickets. And Fatma Sana is that prodigious sort of talent in Pakistan. She took 3 for 24, but then sat out in the second T20I. So there is hope there. But one last thing that we need to talk about in this series is Karishma Ramarak. You were mentioning West Indies stars. She bowled really well in that first T20 international. Her figures read 4 for 15. And there was this one over where Pakistan seemed like they cruised to victory. Alia Riaz and Nida Dar were batting. They're generally reliable-ish. And basically, Karishma Ramarak, the off-spinner, took 3 wickets and gave away about 2-3 runs. And the game was kind of done. Pakistan ended up losing by a solitary run. But that is where West Indies delivered that killer blow. So it's a team which, you know, after DeAndre Dorton, maybe we thought had dropped down a bit. But this series has been immense for them. And I mean, there are 3 T20Is left. And maybe Pakistan could even punch back. But the West Indies have looked at a level above them. That's the reality of it.
They had the women's CPL. And then they played the T10 tournament as well. I think there should be a little bit of a boost in West Indies women's cricket just on that little bit of professionalism that comes in. And, you know, some of these other countries just don't have that. They have national teams, but it's very different than, you know, having to beat the other best players in a competition. So I could certainly see how that would help.
And I love the fact that all of these different teams are kind of operating at a similar level, which we always speak about. But let's go to a level below this, Jared. Let's talk about the Vanuatu girls who were crowdfunding for their kits last week, right? And that's, you know, that was their challenge in order to play those T20 World Cup qualifiers. And now, the very first time they've played a team outside East Asia Pacific, which was Zimbabwe, they rolled them over for 60-odd. They won that game in the qualifiers. And what a story. From crowdfunding for their kits not too long ago, like literally a week ago, to now creating history. This is incredible.
It is. Do you know where they are in terms of qualifying and all those sorts of things? So I know they, because I saw the Zimbabwe game. I saw that it happened.
Did you message your mate Tim Cutler? Wish him congratulations.
I haven't messaged Cutler. I can't believe Cutler hasn't sent me a message actually. Because they. So where are they from a qualification point of view? Do you know the full story? There's a couple more games to go, isn't there, in that series?
I'm
trying to find the scorecards. Yeah. Oh, here it is.
T20 World Cup qualifiers for women. I'm not sure how many teams qualify, actually.
Because Netherlands women smash them. They go up against Ireland, which has some strong players, and UAE, which I don't think I've ever seen the UAE women's team play before. So I don't know how strong they are at all. And it's been a patchy tournament for them because they, Uganda smashed them as well. So they're probably not going to qualify looking at this, but considering that they had no kit beforehand and beating Zimbabwe, I think you take a win against any of these sides, really. As you said, they hadn't played outside of that region before. I think that whole area, you know, all those islands in so many different parts, you know, obviously we've seen Papua New Guinea and we know, you know, about Fijian cricket and some of the other islands and everything else and New Caledonia and the French women's team, which is another story that is coming up at the moment. There is cricket played in that area and it's not always traditional cricket the way that the English played it. Some of these games are, you know, variations of it and everything else. But it's also, I remember when I grew up, a lot of my friends were... Pacific Island, were either born on the Pacific Islands or their family was from the Pacific Islands. And I would always be playing cricket with their mums and their aunties. Like it felt like it was just a natural thing for them to play in a way that it wasn't for other cricket coaching women at that time. So I'm not massively surprised that, you know, some of these islands have done so well, but you know how hard it would be for them to even get to a situation like this. So it's such a massive, step up, and also hopefully a bit of a kick in the butt for Zimbabwe cricket that they might want to look into what's happening with their women's side as well. Because as I said, Vanuatu women were bowled out for 58 against Sri Lanka, and Uganda's women made 119 and they made 84 in response. So there's some, and Netherlands made 154 and bowled Vanuatu women out for 54. Yeah. you have to question what Zimbabwe women are doing at the moment, I think, as well. Based on
I think that's fair. And Hypercost, as always, has given us the info.
He's all over
in the comments. He says, two teams qualify for the T20 World Cup. The two finalists, Vanuatu won't get through to the semifinals, but them just making the tournament was already a huge success, even before beating Zimbabwe. Yeah. And I think that story of the crowdfunding and everything really gave it a lot of steam. And that's why we're so invested. That's why they made it to the podcast, right? Because of that amazing story. Also,
the their star, and I'll butcher her name because I've never said it out loud before, but Nasimana Navika. Mm-hmm. She is she starred in the game against Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. She made 21 of 36 and took 4 for 13 in that game. Which I absolutely love. So she destroyed with the ball and then she anchored with the bat. You can't ask for anything more.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting how you say that East Asia Pacific corridor has a lot of talented teams, because this 17-year-old Indonesian right arm off spinner has just taken the best T20 figures ever, right? None for 7 in 3.2 overs. Okay, her name is Romalia Romalia. So good they named her twice. And I love these little stories that come out of these qualifiers, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know what it is. So that the islands cricket is kind of a traditional thing, and as I said, that you know we've seen this before, that there are little cricket pockets all around in these islands. But then in Asia, I don't know. I'm talking about Southeast Asia here. There seems to be a push for women's cricket at times that comes from nowhere, right? And you can never quite work out why it has happened or how has it happened. And it very rarely does it have any funding, or is there, you know, and then occasionally there'll be like an article in a major newspaper about it. And you know, obviously the Thai women is the biggest story of that.
I think
that.
The Japanese women but as well, right? If I'm not wrong.
That's what, but I think there was a story about women in the Philippines as well. Like, I think there's been a few different stories come up. You know, we had the women's coach of the Cambodian team on Red Inca last week. So that there just is something happening, and I don't fully understand it, but it seems to be a magnificent thing, and hopefully it keeps going. And those are pretty good figures, man. I mean, I've never had figures like that.
I don't think they can be beaten. Like, none for 8 beats that. That's not going to happen. So good job, Romalia, and you're still...
Come on, what's your best figure?
Man, I've taken a hat trick, actually, in red ball cricket. So that's my proud moment, but...
That's not your best
I don't
figures.
Remember my figures as such, but there's some games that I won.
A hat trick is pretty good. I don't want to slag you off.
In the lower order, you know, I would score the winning runs every now and then because I wasn't a mug with the bat. I could just hit straight for the most part, right? I wasn't really good square of the wicket. But with the ball, like, there are some games that I remember I did really well, and then that hat trick is a special memory. But nothing close to Romalia Romalia. My name is not Behram Behram. They didn't name me twice, right?
My best figures are 5 for 8 as well. So yeah, a long way off. Off that as well.
Anyway, we're done with our talking points in pretty good time, and now we'll move on to the super chats, Jared. Let's kick him off.
Oh yes. Yep. What? There we go.
All right. A B C D E F says, how different were the early IPL years with the after parties? Lalit Modi as the head, owners like Vijay Mallya, Pakistan players for one season, etc. I mean, it was wild. It was unlike anything cricket had ever seen before. And I would still think that the parties happened to a certain extent, but maybe not as crazy as it was back in that day.
It's way more professional now. I remember talking to some of those early players, and they couldn't believe what was going on, if we're being honest. And, you know, the stories about what happened in South Africa, I think, are absolutely legendary. And that's when we had the fake IPL player writing his diaries. And, you know, a lot of that has been, I've been told, is very accurate. There was certainly, drugs on offer, whatever you wanted kind of on offer at certain stages. It did stop pretty early. And I think it stopped because once it became a professional league, it wasn't going to continue, right? It couldn't continue in that way. But yeah, no, I think the early part of the IPL was quite full on. I mean, some of the stories out of the CPL, I can tell you stories about, you know, the players talk about on the circuit, certain players turning up to leagues, getting drunk on day one and getting on the plane drunk and not being sober in between, right? And we're not talking about small players sometimes, we're talking about some major players as well. There was a real element of it wasn't real cricket. And you know, I've told this story before, but I remember interviewing Ricky Ponting about this. And I said, why did you take one day cricket so seriously when all the other players didn't? And he was like, I didn't realize they didn't. So I was already taking it seriously when I got in the side and then realized that no one else did. That is very similar with IPL cricket. What that next generation came in and they wanted to be Chris Gayle or Lassith Malinga or Kieran Pollard or, you know, all those Cyrus Rayner and all those big early stars, Yusuf Pathan. They just took it seriously. And it's only when they got there that they realized some of the other players weren't taking it seriously. And now it's that generation has completely taken over. And so it's very, very different.
Yeah. And I mean, T20 cricket on its own was viewed like WWE or WWF by a lot of cricketers of the past. It's not anymore. It's very serious business, right?
Just Salman Bhatt, but he also said the same for Test.
Pretty sure Yunus Khan said that after winning the T20 World Cup.
Did he? Well, the Australians, I mean, India didn't even send over their main players because they didn't think of it as cricket. But the Australians were pretty much like, yeah, this isn't a thing. I mean, the first T20 international, the New Zealand players were wearing wigs, right? So
I remember
that's how seriously people were taking it. And, you know, I mean, and you go back to the first ever game of a men's World Cup in 50 over cricket. Sunil Gavaskar blocked it out because he thought there was no point in him even batting in that game, right? So things have changed.
Yeah, drastically. All right, next super chat. Tia Khalifa says, Pakistan took fast bowlers from India with Kashmir. We don't have Kashmir. You're mistaken. Yeah,
I didn't understand that one
either. That's not how that works.
It is interesting, though, how different parts of the world do create different bowlers, right? So there's obviously something about the pitches up there that are a little bit different than other places because we have seen photos. But what's his name? The Sunrisers fast bowler who's dropped off the map.
Umran Malik. Umran Malik was also Kashmiri. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. So and we know there are Pakistani bowlers from the other
Salman
side as well.
Salman Khan is from Pakistan, Kashmir.
So there is certainly something about that area of the world. And if you go through the history of tall bowlers, there seems to be an awful lot of tall bowlers come out of Western Australia, right? And so you do look at that and you do realize that there is a pattern with those sorts of
things. But also, Tia Khalifa, like Umran Malik is playing in the IPL. Rasik Salam Dar is playing in the IPL. Both those guys are
good. I was going to say, there's two fast bowlers I can think of. I don't know if we call Rasik a fast bowler, but he's a seamer anyway. But yeah, I just find that whole thing, though, interesting of how different regions come up with different kinds of bowlers. And they talk about that a lot in South Africa as well, you know, sort of regional bowlers and everything else.
Yeah. Anyway, Sheratan KD says, will Butler play in the middle order for England? Nah, he's opening. Surely.
You reckon?
Yeah. Because if they open...
Ahead of who?
If they open with Salt and Butler or Bearstone Butler, that makes most sense, right?
Then what about Jax?
Well, Jax is first drop for RCB. He can play first drop for England.
Okay. So, is it Salt or Bairstow?
That's the tough one, right? I mean, based on I would say Salt.
That's what I mean. So, they've got three other options that aren't Butler. And Butler is better at number five than any of them.
That's also fair.
So, I mean, you're right. I think Butler probably opens in the World Cup. But you can't tell me they're not having these same conversations. It's funny. I wasn't, you know, Cheyenne has been, you know, obsessed with kind of the Indian team and for ages, because I remember he told me even before the tournament, we're going to write this big piece. And I was like, okay, fine. and then as the IPL's gone on, I'm like, oh, that's actually really fascinating. How the Indian team comes together is really, really interesting. And now I'm like, how the Australian team comes together is really interesting. And how the England team comes together, really interesting, right? You know, I think South Africa, New Zealand, I don't think this IPL has changed them. But those other three teams have actually really got... issues is the wrong way of putting it, but really got like twists and everything. And, you know, even Shai Hope and the West Indies, there's some, you know, you keep wanting Kyle Mayers to play, right? Like little things like him not playing is, you know, really, really fascinating going ahead. So I think this IPL has really opened up lots of conversations for a few different
100%.
Teams.
100%. Also, just quickly, HypoCost has given us a great fact, which I want to say out loud. He says, worth mentioning the Thailand's Nataya Buchatham, I hope I haven't butchered that, is now the sixth highest wicket taker in women's T20Is, which is amazing. She's got 118 wickets. Also, there is...
118, that's a lot of wickets.
Yeah, there's a racist dude over here, which if you could just kick out. And Jessica Bell is in the comments, who does all of our, timestamps for us. So, good job, Jessica. We definitely owe you one. Now, next question is from I don't know what I'm doing with my life. Well, you're asking us a question. That's one thing. Will rolling back the impact sub impact higher scores? Theoretically, the extra batsman should be offset with by the extra bowler. What are the factors that are affecting T20 scores? Does it spill to the World Cup? Now, I feel that the impact sub is only part of the reason why we're seeing these higher scores. Of course, batting has evolved. You've got to throw in the pitches to a certain extent. And let's be honest, the bowling has also been somewhat really poor in these games that have gone for plenty of runs. So it's a combination of those things. And definitely, in terms of flexibility, the impact sub does make you go harder at it, particularly if the sun rises, right? So it's a combination of those things for me. And it doesn't spill to the World Cup, no.
I wonder if it does.
In the
just because
America leg?
Well, no, you're right. The West Indies might be slightly different, but I wonder if it just spills to the World Cup in that there's going to be a lot of guys who've hit tons and tons of sixes. And they're going to, like, do you honestly believe that Fraser McGurk, if he opened for Australia, would bat differently?
No, he shouldn't.
Right? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. There's a few players, you look at them and you go, okay, they might just go just as hard as they are at the moment, right? So from that side, well, it won't. But yeah, it should have a slight regression, I think. The impact sub could change things a little bit. It was funny, Harsha Bogle was talking about better white balls on today's show or yesterday's? It couldn't have been yesterday. I would have been at Cricket 8, wouldn't I? Must have been today. And I was listening to some of his commentary and I was like, "We could, if you really want to protect bowlers, what about the pink ball?" Which I think would actually be better in 20 over cricket anyway and 50 over cricket. But yeah, I think if you want to know what the factors are affecting T20 scores, it is a combination of England and ODI cricket, Baz ball, T20 cricket, 100 cricket.
Sunrises cricket.
Yeah, but it's all those things coming one after the other. I think I said T20 before, I meant T10. But it's all those things coming up. Players are so much more used to this now and they are looking for their theoretical limits. And the problem is, if you're a bowler, look at how teams handle Baz ball when they first went up against it, right? Especially on flat pitches where there wasn't much that they could do. They had no answers. You are seeing players working this out in real time in white ball cricket. From the moment England worked out how to score to run a ball in the middle overs of ODI cricket without losing too many wickets, this has been coming. And if you listen to anything I've been saying over the last 3 or 4 years, it's overdue. What bowlers were actually doing way better in T20 cricket than they should have been for a long time. And batters were the ones that were batting conservatively. Batters have just got rid of that. And it's the culmination in all those different evolutionary forces coming through. I think one other thing that is quite important is when they reinforce that kookaburra ball, it has made it a little bit harder. And obviously it was actually reinforced for red ball cricket, not for white ball cricket. I've talked about this before. But in reinforcing, putting the plastic under the seam or whatever the thing that they did to make it harder for longer, clearly has kept that ball a little bit harder. And so we don't get as many of those games where teams actually score really quick and then they kind of fade out in the end and they scored 8 runs and over for the last 4 overs. And we all go, oh, the bowlers did such a great job. And it's like, did they? Or was it just that everyone tried to hit the ball and it wouldn't come off the bat in the same way at the end? So I do think there are elements of that as well playing a part. But people just trust themselves to hit boundaries more, right? Travis Head wasn't batting like this a couple of years ago in any format of cricket. Yeah. He just trusts himself in a different level. And how many players are there that were around before that? Shai Hope came in the other day and he scored 40 off 17 balls or 21 balls, whatever it was. Shai Hope was, I would argue, in ODI cricket, the slowest scoring ODI player by era we have ever seen. And he can now hit 40 off 20 balls, right? And I saw a lot of people going, it's the IPL. It's not. He's been doing that everywhere. This isn't just the IPL. His strike rate has gone through. He used to strike at about 110, and he's gone up to 135, 140. That's an extra 0.3 of a run per ball that he has managed to get on. It is not just the IPL, because if you look at it, it was starting to happen last year right across T20 cricket as well. This is the evolution of the sport, but the impact sub is playing a massive part. Oops, wrong one. Oh, no, I've gone. I didn't mean to do all that. I just keep pressing the wrong buttons. The evolution of sport has played an absolutely massive part in all of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like, you know, we'll have every team's first string bowling attacks in the World Cup. And when you're playing for your national team, there is an added layer of pressure, at least for subcontinent teams. And I expect Caribbean pitches to be slow. But in the States, it could happen.
I agree with that.
In the States, it could definitely happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, Path Right Winger says, TGC guys, like to joke about tough catching conditions. Is there something realistic to it? Number two, why have pitch reports been so horrendous? Who are the... Oh, the great cricketer guys like to joke about the tough catching conditions. Okay.
Pitch reports I can't help you with because, I mean, pitch reports are mostly nonsense because you're looking at a blade of grass telling you what a cricket ball will do off it. Like, if you're still listening to pitch reports, I don't know what to do for you. I read an article years ago about how ridiculous pitch reports are for Cricket Info. Tough catching conditions. There are certain grounds that are tougher to catch a ball in. There are, you know, one thing that players will do at certain arenas is when they'll try and practice under lights just so they can hit the ball up as high as possible to see when the ball goes missing. It's not that they ever can't see it, but you know what I mean? There are certain points, you know, in daylight, you can always see the ball really, really clearly. At night, that isn't the same case. It is much tougher to field at night in general. Then you add the dew. There's been some very dewy grounds this year. It hasn't seemed to have affected the bowlers as much, but have a look at some of those fielders out on the ground sliding around everywhere. Batters are hitting there's a lot more pressure now to take the catch because if you don't take the catch, Fraser McGoat might hit the next four balls for six. Mm. I think pressure matters. Someone else made the point recently that hitting the ball really, really hard means we're going to have more drops. Again, that is 100% correct. Don't think it makes up for all the drops we've seen, of course. But, you know, I think all of those things are very, very important when you're having a look at that.
Fair. All right. Swapan Jain says, what are your top four for T20 World Cup in the West Indies? Like, do you want us to rate the teams, I suppose? Because picking semi-finalists...
I think he's just saying who is the teams most likely to make the finals,
you
right?
You go first.
It should be Australia, India... I don't know how I feel about England, but they look great on paper at the moment. I still don't like their bowling. I'd probably put them there. And I'm going to go Henrik Claassen.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go the same four teams because South Africa, I feel like this time they have some of these batters, particularly Henrik Claassen, right? Who could really take the game away from the opposition. And I mean, India, you'd expect to be there. Australia... if they go with McGurk and Head opening the batting, then who's to say what could happen, right? Although I do feel Warner
and Marsh at first drop. If they go all in on that nutcase lineup, they could do absolutely anything. And Cummins is bowling the best he's bowled in T20s in years. So, you know, there's some good signs for them. And Zampa will be rested. Yeah. And, you know, Maxwell has got over his issues. You know, there's some really good signs in the Australian side. I don't think, though, there's a clear team that I would tell you is head and shoulders above the rest in the way that I thought that about India coming into the 50 over World Cup, where I was like, they look like the best team. And then you got a bunch of other teams. I like South Africa because I know they have a lot of bowling options and they have, you know, Claassen and Markram and Stubbs is in pretty good form if they can get him into the order at the right time. I looked at New Zealand. New Zealand's released their squad.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. And I've covered.
Yeah, I looked at their squad and I was like, okay. I wasn't thinking there was anything massive there.
I mean, India, Australia and England are by default, you know, three of the top four teams for most people just because of everything, right? Holistically. But yeah, South Africa would be my pick for the number four team. I do not feel that sauce from either of New Zealand or Pakistan this time. But you never write both of those teams off, man. You never know. Both of them.
I'm writing both those teams
off. Both of those teams could make the semifinals because cricket is weird like
that. They could both make the semifinals. They're not going to win the tournament.
Fair. All right. Who's next? Rishabh Sharma, is it? Yeah, he says drop-in pitch in the US will be fast, bouncy and slow in the West Indies. Well, the West Indies won't have drop-in pitches.
No, but I think what he's saying is that, I mean, that's more or less what we're expecting, right? We're expecting, we're expecting the wickets to be quite batter-friendly in America. And the West Indies is going to depend on the location. Mm. There'll be a couple that will be slow, and a couple others that might be, a little bit more evenly paced. But yes, as a general rule, that's kind of what we are expecting at the moment.
Fair. All right. Path right winger with the final super chat of the show. He says, Deepak Chahar said in an interview that the balls they are being given this year aren't swinging. Is that a good excuse for him and Bhuvi, or are Trent and Sandeep doing something funny to the ball? Well,
I would say in general, we have seen less swing this year than others. You've got to remember the cricket balls come in batches and the leather plays a huge part. And, we have seen Dukes years where no one can play because the Dukes is swinging so much. And we've seen years where the Dukes don't do all that much, right? And one year when the Dukes went soft. And, with Kookaburras, we've seen similar kinds of patterns, for years as well. So I think that's a normal part of cricket. But it's fair to say that they aren't swinging. I don't think, the IPL asks for non-swingy balls because I've seen this happen in tournaments before. But at the moment, I would say... he's probably more or less right. The only thing I would counter that with is if people are all hitting everything for six, the ball is less likely to swing because you've damaged it earlier, right? I mean, these things matter and people are going so hard. There was today in both the game, sorry, in the game today, you could bet over 6.5 runs, 6.5 runs for both the first over in both games. Can you imagine bookmakers having a 6.5 run line in this tournament? What have they been watching? Fraser McGurk and Prithvi Shaw on one side and Sunil Narine and Phil Salt on the other. What we all knew what was going to happen in those overs, right? Both teams are going to try and score 20 in that first over. And that is not how T20 cricket has been played. So you could swing the ball. We've occasionally seen one over where it swung. And then quite quickly after that, they have stopped swinging. That is a problem for Deepak Chahar and Bhuvi, right? Yeah, and it's probably been a problem for Stark as well. Trent Bolt's been better with it, but the swing bowlers early haven't been as dominant. That's completely accurate.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. But anyway, that wraps up our Super Chats. So thank you to everyone who gave us money and also everyone else in the comments section. Thank you so much. If you enjoyed this video, give us a like on YouTube and subscribe to both this channel and Jared's other channel on YouTube. And just a reminder that all of our written work, podcasts, and videos are available at goodareas.co. So go and bookmark that website as well. That'll be it for this week on Overthrows. We'll be back with another episode of Overthrows next week. Till then, goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku, as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.